I think there's a big risk to us of if we fear all this technological change that's coming, all the generative AI, all the RPA that's, you know, been around for a little while now, but still not necessarily well utilized in procurement. If we ignore those things, people outside the business are going to bring them in and you're going to be negatively impacted. If you embrace them and figure out, okay, how can I use those to increase my value proposition, to make me have more value, then you're in the driving seat for how that technology is going to be used.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Modern Business Operations. I'm your host, Seth Colliner. I'm here today with Phil Eidson, who is the founder and managing director of Art of Procurement. Phil, thanks so much for being here today. And to start off, why don't you just share a bit about your background and your current role?
Yeah, my pleasure. And first of all, thanks, Seth, for inviting me onto the podcast. So yeah, I've been in procurement for better or worse since about 2000. So, you know, every year that gets another year more. I'm up to the 24-year mark, I think now, in a variety of different jobs. I've really touched everything there is to touch in the procurement space, in the direct materials space, in the indirect materials and services space, sourcing, category management, risk management, you name it. And that was deliberate. You know, I tried to be a generalist rather than a specialist. And I was fortunate to be a head of procurement relatively young in my career. Then I decided that I would go on the other side of the table, go into the services side. As part of the categories that I had some responsibility was outsourcing. So I was involved in kind of the outsourcing space in the late 2000s. So I went to a service provider of upstream procurement, category management, sourcing services called Procurian. And we were doing transformations. We were, you know, doing procurement in a box kind of services for companies. And we got bought by Accenture. So stuck around there for a couple of years post-acquisition and then set up my own business, Art of Procurement, in 2015. And really the intention, the motivation behind that was so much throughout my career, especially kind of mixing procurement and outsourcing, I would see that a lot of procurement practitioners were afraid of change. I'm a big believer in procurement and procurement to be as impactful as we can, to kind of leave some of the shackles of the past practices we've done and the beat the supplier up at the table for the 3%, which is what my introduction to procurement was in the automotive business. Leave those behind. We can do a lot more for our organizations if we think differently. But a lot of folks are afraid of change. So I kind of wanted to mix those two things up to try and show that let's reimagine the art of the possible for procurement, but also let's provide access to content. Because at the time, there really wasn't a lot of access to content. And I started a podcast back in 2015 of companies who are doing that today. So it provides inspiration so that people can think, yeah, you know, I can drive change and I can have some confidence in driving change because I see others doing a bit, rather than just feeling like everything I try and do is a big risk. And I think we're a risk-averse profession just by our nature.
Sure. Oh, and speaking about the status quo and the change, that's really what we're going to talk about today. In a previous conversation, you told me about, you know, the idea of changing the status quo is about what procurement can be versus what it is. And then if you don't drive change, change will happen to you.
Yes.
What do you mean by all of that? Lay that out for us.
Yeah. So let's talk about if you don't change, change will happen to you. I'm a really big believer that the C-suite within an organization doesn't wake up in the morning thinking about procurement, or the idea of procurement. They may wake up in the morning thinking about how does my organization buy stuff? Or they may worry about how does my organization get stuff? Or, you know, but it's not in this procurement kind of hat that we put on. And so when they do that, they're thinking, okay, what's the best way that my business is going to buy stuff and make sure that we get the stuff that we want, the risks kind of side of things? And who's best placed in the organization to do that? And they may not necessarily think, what is a centralized function called procurement that can do that? They may just think, I employ the people in the business to be the experts in their field. And so therefore they can get the goods and services they need to do their job. And so for us, it's about how can we, therefore, as a procurement function and procurement profession, think about how we position ourselves in a way that demonstrates that we can bring value as a centralized function to the C-suite in the way that the business buys services and goods, if you're not in a regulated or mandated environment, which is oftentimes then procurement is certainly a necessity. And if we can't do that, then why do we exist? What's our purpose? And so I think that kind of ties into the, what are we here for? How do we bring value? We talk a lot about this idea of differentiated decision-making. How do you as a procurement person show up and provide different insights and perspectives to the business to buy the stuff they want to buy that they wouldn't have had, therefore changing their decision should they have done it on their own? And then when it comes to if we don't change, you know, the world around us will change. I'm a big believer that if we're not providing that value proposition where people really are within the business seeing us as somebody who can help them and are coming to us for help, then that C-suite is going to look and say, you know what, those procurement people, it's expensive. All they do is run sourcing processes, or they negotiate with suppliers when my team out of time or whatever. They don't look at it as being value add. And therefore, when somebody comes to them and says, you know what, all those procurement people you have, I've got this great bot now that's going to automate it and you don't even need them. Then the C-suite is going to say, all right, where do I sign up? Because I don't see much value in them anywhere. So I think there's a big risk to us of if we fear all this technological change that's coming, you know, all the generative AI, all the RPA that's been around for a little while now, but still not necessarily well utilized in procurement. If we ignore those things, people outside the business are going to bring them in and you're going to be negatively impacted. If you embrace them and figure out, okay, how can I use those to increase my value proposition, to make me have more value, then you're in the driving seat for how that technology is going to be used.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And actually, it already answers my next question. So moving along, so what should procurement leaders do to get procurement teams themselves, like their people, away from the mindset that they just perform a business function, that they're the gatekeepers of this thing, and then that's all they do, into that more progressive mindset of like, hey, change is coming. Let's not just endure it, but like, let's get on top of it and leverage it to make our area more successful. So back to the original question there, what should procurement leaders be doing to get those teams in that mindset?
I think that it's talking mindset is important because it is a mindset. I think the biggest mindset shift that I had in earlier in my career was when I stopped looking at what I did as being something that was supported by a process and a policy and looked at what I did as being a service. I'm ultimately a service provider and I'm providing a service to the organization, and my organization has a choice of where it invests, where it finds most value, whether it's going to invest more in HR, whether it's going to invest more in procurement, if it's going to invest more in supply chain, if it's going to invest more in more salespeople. And so now that I'm fighting for investment and I'm fighting for customers, then actually seeing what you do as being, you know, how can what I do be compelling enough for somebody to want to come back and use me again? And I think that mindset shift of being an entrepreneur within a business, looking at yourself of how do I create something that people want, and therefore that I'm going to sell my services to, changes the shift from I'm here because a policy exists. And that's what I thought earlier in my career. Were you waving the policy in the process saying, well, if you don't use procurement, I'm going to go and tell your manager kind of thing, you know, tittle-tattle on people and governance. But obviously that's not the way to create influence. And so that was just a big shift for me. You're managing a business within a business. How can you think of yourself as a service provider? And every single interaction you have with a stakeholder is selling to a client or a prospect.
Yeah, it's funny. It strikes me that is simultaneously very exciting. And there's this unwritten future that we all get to, you know, sort of figure out in real time here, especially generative AI is making all these waves and there's all these new tools coming. It's also a little terrifying, the idea that you have to sell, you know, that you can't just like, well, I was hired for a job, but you hired me. So I don't need to sell myself to you. You're the one who told me I needed to do this job. That's a big shift. And it's a little intimidating.
But I would say perhaps that's just the new world, is that your job is no longer come in, you know, analyze data and make recommendations on and drive negotiations to reduce costs with the supplier. Your job is to sell the value of what it is that you're doing. And I think that's tough because I certainly, when I come into procurement, I didn't have a sales bone in my body. In fact, a lot of procurement people look at sales, you know, they're the adversary. But actually, we're a lot more similar than I think people give credit for. It's just same job, different side of the table. So I do think that you just need to embrace that that's the reality of, if you're going to be successful, at the end of the day, it's about relationships. And that feels cliche, because we've been talking about that for years. But it is, at the end, you can have all the best information in the world. You can have the best processes in the world. If you can't build a relationship with somebody and you can't sell them on an idea and influence them, it doesn't matter. All the other things really don't matter.
Yeah, it's funny. I just had a previous conversation today where this sort of thing came up, and for lack of a better term, it's called soft skills.
Yeah.
But in an increasingly high-tech age, it's that, right? It's your ability to communicate with people, educate stakeholders, sell yourself up, and build bridges, alliances, friendships, relationships along the way. And I think there's an irony there of the super high-tech demands this great human aspect. Mm-hmm. And also, because some of it can be so overwhelming, And I found this to be true in a previous career in reviewing products as a journalist. Yeah. People will get so overwhelmed. They just want someone they trust to tell them.
Yep.
And if they just have a question, they want to just go to that person. Like, I need an expert.
Yep.
I need to go talk to my expert. And yeah, and that's where those relationships become so important.
And brand. Now, the brand is super, super important. And what is the brand of procurement? You know, what can you be doing? Well, the one is, what's your individual personal brand within your organization? But what's the brand of procurement? And I think that's something that not enough procurement leaders focus on, is building the brand of procurement, because that's where the perceptions, that's where that drives the conversations when the CEO is in the car with the CFO on the way to a conference saying, did you know that procurement flagged something that I bought as being, you know, to an audit committee because it was over £50 or $50 over what my approval limit was or something? Or did you know that they're doing this to one of my team members? That's where the brand of procurement is formulated. And that's what some of the things that you need to be focused on.
Yeah. Well, and I would add to that too, in my own experience, I love working remotely. I've been working remotely for 13 years or something like that. But I found that we need to get the team together about twice a year,
mm-hmm.
like at least once, about twice a year. And it solves so many organizational problems.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it really humanizes all the people you're working with. And you have a more complete picture of who they are and what their struggles mm-hmm. are and what they do. And you're like, I don't know why I was so irritated with so-and-so in that department. Like, they're great. It takes just that much to diffuse it.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin's process experience platform seamlessly wraps around existing policies and systems, allowing internal service teams to do more with what they already have. Build process experiences that are personalized for each requester, and use AI to automate the intake, triage, and resolution of every request. Maximize adoption, compliance, and efficiency with no change management and no code.
It's the empathy, isn't it? Like, I think that sometimes we don't have enough empathy or recognize the situation, why somebody has made a decision that they've made. You just look at it as being, they did something that's wrong because, you know, they should have done it this way because this is what the process says, for example. Or how do they think they can, this is a good one that I would always hear early in my career, laments from procurement team members. They don't know how to buy anything. I mean, why are they going, well, actually they bought a house and they bought a car and they buy plenty of things in their lives. Yes, they do know how to buy things. But there's oftentimes within procurement teams is this us versus them mentality, because it's always a battle for going around the process. You know, the battle for going around the process can be solved in some part by technology. And as we're seeing now, kind of this explosion in intake and orchestration and the way that you get the transparency and all those good things that help you have a single process to run a purchase through. But it's also about going back to the beginning. Does somebody want to pick up the phone? Or in these days, no one calls each other, but emails. Do I want to email this person for help? Do I think that what they're going to do is be able to help me, or is it going to hinder me? And that's the decision that people make on whether they want to get involved with you or not.
Yeah. I want you to walk through the process, because you have this very clear vision of the sort of setting up a procurement function inside an organization, like the whole path to decentralization and centralization and that whole thing. Can you talk about that? Just spell that out for us.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting what happens for most procurement transformations. Let's say you're starting a transformation because you're not getting the involvement and the engagement that you want in the first place, or perhaps it's a blank space. There is no procurement. And so we go through this process every single time of, okay, so we've got no engagement. So we're going to go with this goal of 100% spend under management, which means we're going to control everything. So you go through this process of trying to control the spend, and you get a lot of pushback from a lot of stakeholders who say, it's not your job. You shouldn't be doing it. I've been doing this all my career. There's a lot of friction that builds up. But you go through that process to centralize procurement. And then, you know, that's a 3-year process, typically. And then you get to that point, and then you say, okay, so now I've kind of centralized. What I realize is, I shouldn't be involved in all these different things that I'm now involved in. So then you go on the process of center-led, which is, we still have a function at the top, but we're starting to devolve more responsibility for purchases back into the organization. Not necessarily everything, but some things, so that we're not doing everything. And we're going to be a consultant now to our stakeholders who are going to do it themselves, so the things that we don't want to get involved in. And then now you're seeing it go even further back to decentralization on the other side of the hill. But now decentralization, but by using automation technologies, for example, or self-source, self-service technologies, where procurement truly is only managing that top 10, top 20%, the stuff that really creates competitive advantage, and then not managing all these other things. So you're going to go through this 5-year process pretty much every single time without fail. And sometimes, you know, you have to take those steps to be able to get to the other side because you need the organization to kind of function and change in a certain way before you get there. Our perspective is definitely that, you know, you don't need to go through that entire 5-year process to get from one side to the other, but it's about how you start thinking about what the role and the purpose of procurement is in the first place. Because I think that's something that we often miss at the very beginning is why do we exist and why does our business need us? Or we try and take this generic view that is not necessarily fit for my company's maturity stage at this point in time and try and push things on the business that they don't need. So, you know, the best ways from we've seen from a transformation perspective are definitely collaboration based. It's around this idea of technology to bring transparency. So you can start to understand better your data, the analytics, where the processes are, how you're going to move processes from one person to the other, how you can start measuring things like all the cycle times. So you're taking friction, as much friction away from people as you possibly can, but don't try and manage everything. I talk about the idea of kind of this 100% spend that we can see what's happening with the spend, but we don't need to manage it. Managing suggests that we're taking away responsibility from somewhere else. And then that allows you to start focusing on the areas that you can really make a difference for and having governance within that, which allows you with the executives of the company to be making decisions upon where your time is best spent. Because I think that's another thing we end up having is we end up saying yes to everything. We compete then where our scarce resources are being competed for across multiple stakeholders. Whereas a CEO or a CFO may get the view of, you shouldn't even be touching that stuff over here. This is the stuff that's really important to me. You know, let's focus on that one area rather than trying to do everything.
Yeah, great. Well, and so what role does technology play in all this, especially right now? Yeah. As this past year, our perspective anyways, this past year, there had been so much talk about some of the upcoming changes in technology. And, you know, and then 2024, ideally, is the year when a lot of that really comes to fruition. So what role is the technology playing right now?
Yeah, I mean, technology plays a huge role. I think that it's not the silver bullet, you know, that so oftentimes you see transformations that fail because too much was put on technology. The business case for technology was sold that it was going to solve everybody's problems. And so there was a big price tag. There was a lot of implementation dollars. You get it on site and it doesn't take you 2 or 3 years to figure out what your ROI really was. And a lot of transformations kind of fail because it was, like I say, technology is going to solve everything. But technology today is allowing us to do things that we couldn't do before. So that's what's the most exciting thing is how can we use technology in a way to supplement the people, to supplement the process as opposed to replace it, but ultimately in a way that helps the procurement folks focus only on the things that's the most important to the business. You know, let's let technology take care of everything else, but also then let's let technology help us run more consistent processes. Let's let technology help us scale best practices. Because I think one of the challenges that a lot of procurement teams have is scaling best practices, because best practices are often individually based rather than because they're almost in spite of our process sometimes that you just have a super high performing individual rather than because of our processes. So how do you kind of bridge that gap? And the other area is on data. The problem, as I said at the beginning, I've been in procurement for 24 years. We've never solved the data problem. And the data problem is, can you trust, if you go to your stakeholder having pulled a report of what you spend, can you trust that it's accurate and then they're not going to point holes in it? And 24 years later, you know, everyone can still poke holes in all of our data. That's what's really interesting to me certainly from a generative AI perspective, is how can that help us, one, finally get cleaner data, get data which is supplemented by sources outside of the organization, and then be able to query that data that doesn't require us to have a degree in setting up reporting capabilities and functionality. So it becomes a lot more accessible.
Yeah. What is the best advice you've ever received in your career?
That's a great question. I think very early in my career, as probably the second company that I joined, you know, I went from an organization that had an extremely mature procurement function and capability. And I honestly didn't know it at the time because it was my first job. I just thought that was kind of the standard. And I went to another organization which at the time was pretty immature in the procurement maturity and was just trying to build. Really, the advice I was given is when you're trying to, whether it's put together proposals or solutions or working with stakeholders on ways you can help them, don't think about it as if it's a 1 or a 2 out of 10, don't try and get to a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. Change is a journey. So if you can take somebody in the first iteration from being at a 1 or a 2 out of 10 to a 3 or a 4 out of 10 and where they are, that's progress. But you can then reset that to go and look at, okay, how next time do I take them from a 4 out of 10 to a 7 out of 10? And then the next time, how do I take them from a 7 to a 9 out of 10? So it was really this idea of, you know, don't try and do too much all at the same time, all at once, and that change takes time and you just have to do it on a planned, kind of methodical journey rather than trying to just get from the 1 to the 10.
And in closing, is there anything you want to promote or share about yourself or your company? And if people want to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, in terms of contacting, then we publish a lot of content from the procurement space. As I say, we're always trying to inspire folks to think differently about procurement and give them a lot of tools that they can to do so. We have a podcast that's been going for 9 years, 660 episodes in, and we've been very fortunate. You know, we've had probably 1.25 million plus downloads of the podcast in that time. So anybody who's interested in just learning a little bit more, learning from our guests, hearing more about the stories that we share, that's all at artofprocurement.com. We actually just started a new podcast on supply chain, specifically for supply chain, called Art of Supply. That's just artofprocurement.com/supply. So pretty easy as well to find that one. So I'd encourage folks to go and check out kind of the repository of insights and things like that that we have. We do help organizations from a services perspective then turn those insights into practice. So we're always happy, willing, and able to talk to any companies on that transformation journey, thinking about going on a transformation journey, interested in figuring out where they should go, what they should look like, or how, you know, how their current capabilities stack up. So artofprocurement.com is the easiest way for me personally. I'm always active on LinkedIn. So just searching for me on LinkedIn is a great way to find me and reach out and say hello.
Excellent. Phil Eidson, thank you so much. Check out Art of Procurement, everyone. We have this friendship between shows. It's been great. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks, Seth.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.